12:07 will please come to order. I'd ask that you all rise and join with me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, if you call the roll, please.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Train?
Here.
Ms. Danner?
Here.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Stone?
Here.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Present.
Mayor Botello?
Here.
You have a quorum.
That brings us first on our agenda to special orders of business. I turn to our city manager.
Thank you. And I would like to introduce you to our new deputy city manager, Rob Steedle. And I think we're going to make a great team together, and feel free to talk to either one of us if you need any information.
Rob, welcome on board in this role. With that, we move to the approval of minutes. We have first before us the minutes of the March 5th, 2012, regular meeting 2012-05. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, is there objection to their adoption? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to the minutes of the March 14th, 2012 Special Assembly Meeting 2012-06. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, is there objection to their adoption? Hearing none, so ordered. Madam Manager, are there any agenda changes you wish to call to our attention?
Yes, there are. I would like to pull under new business B, Ock Bay Elementary School Renovation Bid Award, because we've received a protest for that. So if we could please pull that. It's under new business at the end of your packet. It's on page 9.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, we move to public participation on non-agenda items. During this period of the meeting, any member of the public can address the assembly on an issue otherwise not appearing on the agenda. We allot a total of 20 minutes for this, and we divide the amount of time available by the number of speakers who have requested to speak during this time. I show at this point six people who have asked to testify and ask for the assembly to authorize each to speak a maximum of 4 minutes, which is a little beyond. Does anyone object to that? With that, I'll begin with Ms. Amy Skilbritt. Ms. Skilbritt, I'll ask you to identify yourself for a record.
Yeah. My name's Amy Skilbritt, and I'm talking on the climate action plan and how it relates to the Willoughby District. The adoption, you're going to do it this evening, but this is particularly about the building code and seeing if the CBJ and the assembly could ask that the building code be looked at in order to implement the IECC 2012 building codes, their energy efficiency recommendations, when looking at the increased density and height for the Willoughby District area. And so that would, you're not taking that part of it up this evening, but it's something that it would be great to look at, because in building new commercial, residential, industrial sort of development in that area, if we could do it in Juneau to a greater degree of energy efficiency, that would extend the hydro that we have in our community and make it more affordable for all of us, plus help the CBJ meet the energy efficiency goals outlined in the climate action plan that was adopted by the assembly in, I think it was December. So any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. You. Next, Mr. Murray Walsh.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Murray Walsh, representing Bicknell Construction tonight. We sent a letter to the Assembly a couple of weeks ago, and tonight is the first time that I was aware of that we could talk to you about it in public as a group. And I presume you've all had a chance to at least look at the letter, and I'm here tonight to see if you have any questions about it. And to kind of tell the story very quickly, the property called the Hansinger Pond property, 83 acres, 27 of which is pond, has been used as sand and gravel source in the city for a long time. It is played out now, and the land, which is mostly not wetlands, is available to be used for other things. In the course of buying the property last year, an appraisal was done. The appraisal opined that the property could easily be rezoned to industrial or commercial. The McNeils checked out that assertion by going to CCDD, and we're told, yes, a rezone is entirely possible. That was before the unfortunate events associated with the Atlin Street rezone. And to this day, I still don't quite understand that, but what we're told now is that the comprehensive plan is going to have to match up with any anticipated rezone. So we need for the city to amend the comprehensive plan to an industrial category so that we can rezone that property to industrial, perhaps with some commercial. So that's what it's all about. Seems like it's the fair and right thing to do. Preliminary indications with the planning staff would seem that they're supportive of it. So what's unclear is the procedure. And I was told to approach the assembly and ask for the assembly to direct the Community Development Department and the Planning Commission to take up the matter of such an amendment. And then it would ultimately come back to you to be approved at the end. But basically that land is worthless now without some kind of change in zoning.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Are there any questions? Again, thank you for your testimony.
So,
Mr. Walsh, you know, our procedure is that we don't comment during this portion of the meeting. We may take action later this evening.
Okay, thanks.
Next, Ms. Carla Hart.
Thank you. My name is Carla Hart. I'm here with Spring to talk about a perennial problem in Juneau. A couple months ago, I was out at the Mindenhall Glacier Campground cross-country skiing. It becomes a bit of an obstacle course. People talk about the brown clister. It's fairly thick. I was there one day when the kindergartners from one of the schools and the charter school folks were all out learning to ski, and were skiing around and falling in the snow that's littered with brown clister. I then watched the kindergartners sitting around in their different classes having their snacks in areas that I know were laced with dog poop, whether or not they were immediately visible. We have a really serious problem with dog waste in the area. Dog waste is raw sewage. It is not just some benign substance. I've done a bit of research on it. Animal stool can contain bacteria and parasite eggs that infect humans and pets. Infection happens when tiny amounts of animal stool containing the germs reach the mouth. People may become accidentally infected when they touch their mouth with soiled hands. Think about any time you go biking or walking. You get in your car, your kid gets in the car, they put their feet on the seat, you set your skis on, they drip. We're getting fecal coliform-laced cars. It's really insane when you think about the whole pathway of transmission. Pretty soon you don't want to set your shopping bag that was on your seat on your counter when you get home. In addition to the fecal coliform, there's roundworms of different sorts, hookworms. Many of these need to have time in the environment to mature and so that they can go on to their hosts. So just because a pile is old and has sat there for a while and sort of washing away doesn't mean that the things that can cause us harm are going away. So I'd like to ask the Assembly to take on the issue of dog poop. I know it's not a popular or easy issue, but it needs to be addressed. There are also issues with people having their dogs off-leash and out of control. I've met several people this winter who were injured by dogs that had knocked them over. The dogs didn't mean to harm the people. The dogs were just being dogs, but they were off-leash, and people ended up with injuries that resulted in treatment with doctors and broken bones and what have you. That's not acceptable. If the owners of these dogs were pushing older people down and causing them injury. It would be assault. But because we let the dogs do it and we say, oh, they're just dogs, I'm sorry, he's friendly, we're letting him get away with it. There are people who are being injured by dogs being off leash from perfectly nice dog owners who just don't get it somehow. 2003, I participated in the dog task force. We've had 8 years. Voluntary compliance was to be the answer. I think that the proof is that voluntary compliance hasn't been enough. The Humane Society estimates that 50% of the dogs in Juneau are not even licensed. That's a basic law that is passed to protect us, to make sure that the dogs have a rabies vaccine. 50% of the dogs aren't even licensed. That's money that's not going into the city to help to support the canine enforcement. There are a lot of reasons that the laws that we have on the books now aren't enforced. I think there's someone from the Humane Society here to speak with you about that tonight. Canine control officers are threatened by people who think that their dogs have more right than anyone else. So they don't even have the ability to enforce some things for fear of injury to these unarmed officers who are out there. I'd like to ask the Assembly to ask the Juneau Police Department or direct them to send uniformed officers out with the canine control officers at times to do random, intense patrol, checking people's licenses, patrolling and enforcing, and letting the public know that it's not acceptable to threaten people who are serving the public. So I'd ask the Assembly to act on this now, not to form another task force to think about things for a year and try voluntary compliance now, but to take some decisive action and try and clean up our community and make it safer. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hart. Are there any questions? And thank you for your testimony. Next, Ms. Gwen Ballas.
Hi, I'm Gwen Bayless, and I'm speaking as Conservation Chair for Juneau Audubon Society. Carla brought up the issue of loose dogs and owners who don't take responsibility for the droppings. To the health and safety concerns, I'd like to add the wildlife disturbance issue. Uncontrolled dogs routinely chase birds in key migration areas, especially Eagle Beach and the Mendenhall Wetlands, which is a nationally designated important bird area. Migratory and nesting birds need to eat and conserve energy, not spend their time escaping dogs. And the people who enjoy watching them should be able to do so on the land that belongs to all of us. Mammals can be affected too. For example, there have been cases of deer being killed locally. Harassing wildlife is illegal, and allowing it undermines local conservation efforts. Finally, we have a concern about water quality due to the volume of untreated feces in the environment, and these diseases can also be passed on to wildlife. We urge you to allocate resources to enforce existing laws and work with stakeholders to better educate the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bayless. Are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next, Ms. Sarah Lynn Tabachnik.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, Executive Director of AWARE. It was great to see many of you at the Choose Respect March on Thursday. I'm not sure, but I think there was a quorum. Last fall, the city submitted a community development block grant to the state for extended stay safe shelter for women and families leaving AWARE's emergency safe shelter. For the design and construction of 6 units, 4 two-bedroom units, and 2 efficiency units, we recently got notification that the proposal was selected for funding. That's for up to $850,000. We're quite excited about that. It's a great success, I think, for AWARE, for the City and Borough of Juneau, and for the entire community. We appreciate having the City and Borough of Juneau as a partner in addressing domestic violence and sexual assault and working towards long-term safety and stability for women and families in Juneau. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Tawson. Are there any questions? Again, thank you for your testimony. Finally, Ms. Julie Coghill.
Hello, my name is Julie Coghill. I am president of the Juneau Audubon Society. Before coming here tonight, I was out on the dike trail for about 45 minutes. There were 18 dogs out there that I counted, one of which was on a leash. I also counted 108 piles of dog poop. The Juneau Audubon Board is very, very interested in working with this issue, and we would like you to know that whatever you decide to do, we would like to be involved in that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cahill. Are there any questions? And thank you for your testimony. This concludes public participation on non-agenda items. We move next to the consent agenda. Any item, and in this case we have only one item other than an ordinance for introduction relating to a liquor license. That is the only item which may be removed for public comment. Let me ask if anyone wishes to have that matter removed to do so. Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Mr. Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We have then next before us ordinances for public hearing. First before us is ordinance 2012-11. Madam Clerk.
This is an ordinance amending the land use code relating to appeals of rezoning decisions.
Madam Manager.
In 2011, the Planning Commission recommended that a proposal to rezone property on Atlin Drive be denied. A property owner in the area suggested that pursuit of the matter to the Assembly should be as an appeal of the Commission's decision, not as a hearing on a recommendation. Although Title 49 is clear, when the Planning Commission approves a rezoning, the action is a recommendation. The code is silent as to whether the action is a recommendation or a final decision if the Commission denies the rezoning. Because only final decisions of the Commission can be appealed to the Assembly, the code could be clarified if the Commission's action is a recommendation or a final decision. The proposed ordinance would establish that the Commission's decision for denial is a final decision that may be appealed to the Assembly. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on Ordinance 2012-11? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action.
I would move ordinance 2012-11 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to ordinance 2012-12B. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance providing for the issuance and sale of a general obligation school bond in the aggregate principal amount of not to exceed $13,190,000. And providing for the form and the terms of the bond and for unlimited tax levies to pay the bond.
Madam Manager.
The Finance Director is recommending the substitution of version B for 2012-12, the one in your packet tonight. The ordinance, if adopted, would authorize the issuance of a portion of the Ock Bay School and the Adair Kennedy Turf Field bonds. The original ordinance would approve the issuance of all the voter-approved bond authorization, $21.29 million, as a single issue. After reviewing options, the project cash flow, and our future debt service, it was determined to be in the best interest of the CBJ to divide the Ock Bay School bonds into two issues. The first issue would be for a total of $13.19 million, and the second for $8.1 million. The second issuance would occur in June or July of 2013. Splitting the bonds will result in overall lower debt service mill levy for FY13 and 14 and reduce the debt service mill levy change between FY14 and FY15 due to the maturing of our 2004 school bond issues. The bonds being issued consist of the following voter authorizations. A portion, $11.3 million of the $18.7 million approved by the voters on October 5, 2010 for the Ock Bay School renovation. A portion, $700,000 of the $1.4 million approved on October 4, 2011 for the Ock Bay School ground source heating system, and all of the $1.19 million approved on October 4, 2011 for resurfacing the Adair Kennedy Turf Field. The bonds will be issued for a 10-year term. 10 years is the minimum term to qualify for the state school construction bond debt reimbursement program. All three authorizations qualify for the 70% reimbursement under the state's reimbursement program. However, the reimbursement under the state's program is subject to annual appropriation by the legislature. The remaining debt service after state reimbursement will be paid from property tax levies. The estimated total cost of the debt service, including interest and an average rate of 2.4% for the 10-year bond, is $15.03 million. CBJ should receive reimbursement from the state of $10.52 million, assuming full state funding, leaving $4.51 million to be paid from local property tax levies. The maximum estimated annual property tax mill levy needed to fund the local share, assuming full state funding, is 0.1 mils or $10 per 100,000 in assessed value. I recommend version B of this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on this ordinance? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move ordinance 2012-12B for the purpose of discussion.
You have the floor.
Thank you. And I have a question for the city manager. With all the talk that we've had about federal and state cutbacks in terms of funding, I'm concerned that we go into things like this with our eyes wide open. So do you know what the outcome would be if the legislature should decide not to appropriate funding for school debt reimbursement? Do we have a plan B in place, and what kind of impact would it have on us?
Mr. Duncan.
Per the terms of the normal general obligation issue, they're secured by property taxes. And so we would be pledging the full faith and credit of the city. And so if the state did not pay the 70% or paid something less than that, we would be obligated to find it through the mill levy. It doesn't necessarily mean there couldn't be offsets somewhere else, but we'd have to identify a mill levy to pay that debt.
Ms. Banner.
And would we have sufficient – what is the cap right now in terms of our mill rate?
There is no cap on debt service. There's a cap on operations.
Oh, so do we have any idea how much our mill rate would be increased if, in fact, we didn't get an appropriation in any given year?
Yes, not offhand. I can tell you that we have a little over $150 million in outstanding debt, and a little over $90 million of that qualifies for state reimbursement or would be reimbursed by the state. And so... it'd be a sizable increase. It would increase, you know, by 150%. So if we owed a dollar, then we would owe, say, $2.50 if the state didn't fund the program.
Mr. Duncan, just looking at rough ballpark, it strikes me to be about 0.2 or 0.25.
Yes, just for this bond issue, I think the issue might be is if they didn't fund this issue, then we have a whole lot more debt than this. But, yeah, for this particular issue, it would go to about 2.5. Point two and a half, yeah.
Ms. Tanner, anything further?
No, that's all my questions.
Any further questions or comments by the Assembly? If not, is there objection to adoption of Ordinance 2012-12, Version B? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to Ordinance 2012-13. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the Land Management Code.
Madam Manager.
The Lands and Resources Office has been working with the Law Department to update and improve Title 53 pertaining to the management of CBJ's real property. Title 53 has not undergone a comprehensive review since the early 1980s. Proposed amendments are being developed incrementally, starting with the beginning of Title 53. The first portion of Title 53 addressing land acquisition was amended by ordinance in January 2011. This ordinance addresses the next section, 53.09.010 through 0.70, pertaining to policies, status maps, land classification, and land management plan. The ordinance does not modify CBJ policy on how real property will be managed. It focuses on eliminating redundant and or outdated processes, including deleting status maps and classifications, overhauling the land management plan, and establishing a new biennial reporting system to replace the land disposal system, the land disposal schedule. Background information was included, and the analysis of these changes is in your packet. due to the references to the Planning Commission in Section 53.09-100 through 180, covering land classification, the land management plan, and the new biennial report, the Planning Commission was invited to review and comment on those sections of the proposed ordinance. At its February 14, 2012 meeting, the Planning Commission recommended adoption of the ordinance. The Lands Committee recommended this action at its February 27, 2000 meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to testify on this ordinance? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Ms. Becker.
Thank you. I move serial number 2012-13 for purpose of discussion.
You have the floor.
Thank you. I have some questions about some of the statements that are in this, and they basically start, I have three areas that I would like to discuss, Mr. Mayor. They're on page 8 and 9. Basically, I want a little more definition as to what this actually means. On number 7, I feel like it's broad to say wetland should be leased only for specific uses and not sold, because I thought we had some rights to sell C and D wetlands if we choose to, without too much oversight by the federal government. And I may be completely wrong about that. And I just would like to know, it seems to me to say wetlands in general means all wetlands, period. And the not sold part is the part that I'm not sure I understand, as far as do we have any rights to those wetlands to sell them.
And I'd like Cynthia Johnson to come up, since she's been working on that.
Johnson.
As indicated in the manager's report, we did not attempt to address policy at this point in time because of the magnitude of the changes and the sense of a lot of deletions, as you've noted. We discussed it internally, and in our conversation at the outset with the law department, we looked at what we are trying to achieve here. It's been almost 30 years since this portion of the code was given a good look and review, and we have a lot of work to do in terms of processes that we want to make more efficient. We see and we have a vision for how the office can operate much better than it does today by trimming the outdated portions of the code and developing a process that is going to be far more efficient, much more nimble, and I think much more responsive to the Assembly. So that particular portion of the code that you're addressing is principles that have been modeled largely after the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan is currently being updated, and our position on this is that it would be timely to do the updating of the policy portion of this code after we have developed the updates for the processes portion of the code, and after the comprehensive plan has been adopted.
Thank you. I do agree that many things have been cleaned up in this, but I just felt that was very broad. And also, the comprehensive plan, I didn't quite understand why this was being done before the comprehensive plan, if the comprehensive plan is going to make changes here. I guess that's what I want. I would like to know that, too, but that's not the other two questions I have.
Let me just, you raised an issue here. As I understand it, Ms. Johnson, what we have embodied in this ordinance is largely changes to procedures, no changes really to policy, which you expect will come later. The primary purpose of this ordinance is to reflect or to update basically procedures within the lands department.
That's correct.
Ms. Packard?
Mr. Mayor, does that mean that the things that are here, I mean, how does procedure not mean that it's something that you follow? And I don't quite, I just don't understand this, I'm sorry. Because For instance, number 10, might go to number 10. The region scenic, we'll just go scenic, should be protected from the adverse impacts of urban development. That is a procedure, but not a policy, and that's pretty broad because everything in this community is scenic, in my opinion.
Ms. Becker, my understanding is what's reflected in 150C, which begins line 21 on page 7. What you're commenting on there, those are all policy statements. Those are not procedure. These are how the city is to be guided in making decisions. It doesn't talk about the process that will be used to get there, and that the changes that are reflected here are primarily directed at the process, not the policy.
So, thank you, Mr. Mayor. You would say then that it wouldn't necessarily mean that wetlands could not be sold, and it wouldn't necessarily mean that all scenic areas couldn't have an adverse impact of urban development?
Ms. Becker, my understanding is those are the directives in the ordinance. Those have basically been the directives in place for some extended period of time. And they will remain in place until the Assembly decides to change them, but I think the suggestion from Ms. Johnson is the appropriate time to do so would be at the point that you're working with, this body is working with a comprehensive plan. Ms. Johnson, have I accurately stated that?
Yes, correct.
Well, then may I just mention one more then? Since we're going to be discussing it in the comprehensive plan, I'd like it to be discussed in the comprehensive plan. And that's number 13, which the reason I'm bringing these up is because they are extremely broad, in my opinion. And I think they should be limited, so maybe the comprehensive plan will limit them. But if we take 13 and we just take out the and shoreline and just say lands, that's pretty broad. Lands that possess recreational, scenic, wildlife, and other environmental qualities should be preserved as open space. My goodness. That's pretty broad. And so I just find these things, no matter how long they've been in operation, surely that has not been something we comply with, because we do allow our lands to be sold, and we don't keep all land that are recreational, scenic, and so forth, wildlife on them, environmental qualities. Anyway, I hope you see what I'm saying. I just find these things to be very broad, and if we are feeling comfortable that the comprehensive plan will cover all of these things, then I will can live with it. But if the comprehensive plan does not cover it, I would assume this would be the ruling document in light of there not being something that speaks to it in the comprehensive plan.
That's correct. With that, Ms. Danner, I think, had a question that is probably a follow-on to some of your questions, Ms. Becker. So
yes, I do
that, and then we'll return to Ms. Becker.
Yeah, and I have two. One is a follow-on to Ms. Becker's question, which is a question for Ms. Johnson in terms of when you think that we'll be having the policy questions come back before us.
As I indicated, I think what we want to do is wait until the comprehensive plan is updated, and at that point in time we could come back and revisit this. But we are looking at the entire Title 53, and we've been working at it incrementally from beginning to end, so we have quite a bit of work ahead of us just to move forward and finish Title 53. I think it will take several more months just to do that work, and I don't anticipate us coming back and discussing policy issues until we finish that.
Ms. Johnson, when do you expect this assembly to be reviewing the comprehensive plan in a general sense?
I asked Mr. Panula that this morning, and he thought it would be sometime early summer.
Ms. Danner.
And shall I continue? My other question then is, actually I think one for Mr. Hartle. It says that there's a new section authorizes promulgation of regulations, and I'd like to have that explained more thoroughly to this body.
Sure, if I could.
Mr. Hartle.
The site, this is at the top of page 2, and this would grant the Lands and Resources Division the authority to promulgate regulations to implement all of Title 53. The site, 0160, is the, I was going to say fairly new, I suppose it's 10 years old by now, ordinance governing the creation of regulations, and it sets out the process. It's all about process, and it requires notice to the public, notice to anybody who holds a permit or the like that's based on that title, and then it, as you know, at the end of the process, the regulations come before the assembly for its approval. Is not quite the right word, for its non-opposition. Would be a little more correct. So,
or rejection,
which it sometimes does. In other words, we've put this in the code in quite a few places. Before the adoption of 0160, the word regulation appeared, I won't say randomly through the code, but it appeared frequently and it had different meanings. And so at some point, a fairly comprehensive ordinance was adopted to regulate the promulgation of regulations and to make sure the public had proper notice and the assembly had the final say on it.
And so just for clarification, then regulations are administrative rules that are created to carry out the intentions of the ordinances that, or how is that? I mean, I'm just not clear on what we're gaining by allowing the creation of more regulations.
Mr. Arnold.
You stated it exactly there. Regulations are the administrative rules prepared by the manager to implement the ordinances adopted by the assembly. As you can see, it says that it grants the authority to promulgate regulations to implement this title. The title is Title 53, the Lands Management Code. And certainly a regulation that's inconsistent with the title that it's to implement would be unenforceable. It would be illegal. In our overall hierarchy, we have the CBGA Charter. It's like our Constitution. And then we have the ordinances. Finally, below that, there are regulations. And even below that, there are policies and rules that the city uses to operate. When Ms. Johnson and I talked about adding this little section here, it was, for example, in the land disposals. The Lena Point land disposal was the example we talked about, if I recall. There are all kinds of rules needed for how the person buying the properties that are being disposed of can finance it through the city, and a whole set of rules for the timing of the bids on each of the properties and all these things that don't need to be in ordinance, that can be at a lower level and that can be produced by the manager to implement the title.
Great. Thank you very much.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think there's a lot of good work in here, really a lot. And I know it's taken a lot of time, and I appreciate all the work. I find because it gives, I think this gives a lot of power to this. It identifies the management intent, and that's to me, because I just have serious questions about the kinds of things that we are limiting ourselves to. And I think we should do the comprehensive plan first and then do this. And for that reason, I will not be able to vote for it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Mr. Dibdahl.
Yeah, I think the operative word in all of these, as you look, is should. And it provides some guidance that somebody thought all of these things should maybe be looked at. And once they get the comprehensive plan policies down, they can backtrack and look at these as well, and we'll have the input on the comprehensive plan. So I support the ordinance.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Stone?
Yes.
Mr. Wanamaker?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Ms. Danner?
Yes.
Mayor Botello?
Yes.
Motion carries.
We have next before us Ordinance 2012-14. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the comprehensive plan by adopting Chapter 5 of the Willoughby District Land Use Plan.
Madam Manager.
On February 28, 2012, the Planning Commission recommended the Assembly adopt Chapter 5 of the Willoughby District Land Use Plan as part of the CBJ Comprehensive Plan. At its meeting on March 15, 2012, the Lands Committee passed a motion of support to the Assembly to adopt Chapter 5 of the Willoughby District Land Use Plan with amendments as recommended by the Planning Commission. The comprehensive plan must be adopted, must be amended, to adopt Chapter 5 of the Willoughby District Land Use Plan to support proposed changes to Title 49 and to identify a conceptual blueprint for investment and redevelopment of this area. The State of Alaska and the City and Borough of Juneau own significant public facilities in this area, several of which are or will be considered for expansion or improvement in the near future. In addition, this area provides significant opportunity for increased residential housing development to satisfy a portion of the affordable housing demand in the community. With coordinated planning and development concepts, the Willoughby District Land Use Plan can also address challenges to safe, efficient pedestrian, bicycle, transit, and vehicular circulation. Certain portions of the plan have been implemented in advance of the adoption, including the extension of the PD1 parking zone to include this area. The Lands Division and Community Development Department are currently working on Title 49 revisions to building heights and development bonuses. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the Assembly on Ordinance 2012-14? Ms. Waterman, please.
I'm Nancy Waterman. I live at 227 Gastineau Avenue. Thank you for this opportunity. I support adoption of this ordinance. Chapter 5 of the Willoughby District Land Use Plan should be part of our guiding document, the Comprehensive Plan, as the community moves forward with amendments to Title 49, the Land Use Code, specifically on such topics as parking, building heights, residential density. Additionally, I'll take this moment to say the goal of the Juneau Climate Action Plan is to reduce community emissions by 25% by 2032 in 20 years. In the Willoughby District, such items as residential density, pedestrian emphasis, building orientation, and efficiency and energy conservation in all the buildings will help the community meet this goal. Centennial Hall is within the Willoughby District. An investment energy audit has been completed on this important community building. The Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation is working on an outreach effort to ensure that these audits, which contain some very valuable information for the formation of retrofit plans, do not get exiled to a shelf. Centennial Hall is on the 2013-2018 CIP list. Let's set the energy efficiency and conservation standard for this building at a high level. Let's review the audit. Minimally, the CIP list supports replacing the roof in fiscal year end 13 and completing plumbing improvements in fiscal year end 14. So I've taken the opportunity give you a little foresight into how I feel about the CIP list and Centennial Hall's place on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Waterman. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Is there any other member of the public who wishes to testify on Ordinance 2012-14? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for Assembly action. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2012-14 and ask for unanimous consent.
Ms. Danner.
I just have some questions before the vote.
You have the floor.
Thank you very much. My questions are probably for Ms. Marlowe.
Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you very much. This looks like a lot of work, and I've sat in on a few presentations. I'm, in general, very pleased with the direction that the Willoughby plan is taking. I just want to ask two things. One is, in all the information that was provided to us this evening, I did not see any indication of which Native interest groups have been consulted and what kind of response you have received from them.
Okay, thank you. So on the acknowledgments page of the plan, it's about the third, fourth page in, we have an acknowledgment of thanking Central Council, Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, who hosted several meetings at the Andrew Hope Building, and they reached out to Village Street residents to ensure that there was representation from the neighborhood, and I'm reading from the top of the page on the acknowledgement section. And we presented a copy of the draft plan to them for comment and did not receive any comments back, but we had very good dialogue at the two neighborhood meetings that we hosted.
Great. Thank you very much. And then the second question is, of course, with regard to energy efficiency. Is there anything in the plan right now? Can you highlight some of that for us?
Yes, let me find that section. We have a section in the plan that talks about the energy district for the Willoughby district, and that thought is that we would have either a central plant where we would do district heating so that we could bring public facilities online with a centralized distribution of heat, and or look at doing individual heat, basically like individual pellet stoves as the boilers in these public facilities, in private facilities as well. And so we've taken a look at the square footage of public facilities in the district. We're working with Bob Deering of the Coast Guard, who's working with the Energy Department, and they're trying to determine whether, just from the public facility side, we have enough square footage to justify doing an energy district with distributed heat throughout the district, and that would be an energy savings and then also a carbon savings.
Great. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Mr. Smith.
Mr. Mayor, Ms. Marlowe, assuming we go forward with this ordinance and it's adopted, what kind of vehicles, financing vehicles, do you see the CBJ being supportive of so that we will have investment and we will have development in this area?
At this time, I don't have anything in particular to point to, but I would say that it is one of the next steps to have a conversation, several different conversations on how to do just those points. I think that there are some areas of overlap in looking at how we can finance housing and increasing the number of dwelling units in this area. This area is set up for a significant amount of residential occupancy, and we have less than 100 dwelling units, and we have a goal in the plan of getting to 300 to 400 dwelling units. We have the Affordable Housing Finance Fund now in place. We have made several project contributions from that fund, one in particular, and I anticipate that the Willoughby District is a prime area for more financing and supporting new investment in this district for housing. I think that we need to have a similar conversation with our private landowners. Some of the feedback that I've been getting from the private landowners is, please don't put this all on our shoulders. These are your goals. These are your aspirations. These are your visions. We want to be a part of it, but we don't want it to fall all on our shoulders. So there's a spectrum of answers. You know, you can go to one end of the spectrum, and you can say that we want to do a local improvement district, and you draw a district boundary degree, and you can start to tax differently and collect revenues differently from this district and reinvest in the district. That's one way to do it, and that's something that I think the Anchorage is a model that we could call upon. And then there's kind of the softer approach where people can just come to us and say, I have an idea, I want supportive financing, or I want the borough's assistance in some other format, and we can do one-on-one deals with developers. But the answer to your question is, I think we need to have several fine-tuned, targeted conversations and follow up with how to carry this forward, housing and commercial investment.
Thank you. My concern is that we do move forward as quickly as possible once the ordinance is adopted.
Thank you.
Further discussion? If not, is there objection to adoption of ordinance 2012-14? Hearing none, it is adopted. We move next to ordinance 2012-15. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance to designate a tax foreclosed property located at 5871 Churchill Way for a public purpose for the benefit of the Juno Douglas High School Home Building Program.
Madam Manager.
The CBJ Finance Department foreclosed on Lot 8, Block A, Glacier View Subdivision, also identified as 5871 Churchill Way, for failure to pay property taxes. The property is improved with a partially completed residential structure that has not received a building permit. The property is desirable for the Juno Douglas High School Home Building Program. If the project were to proceed, the property would be cleared of improvements and redeveloped. The property would be sold to the Juno Housing Trust, a partner of the Juno Douglas High School Building Program, for the amount necessary to satisfy the delinquent property taxes, plus any other expenses or demolition costs incurred by the CBJ to convey the property for redevelopment. These costs are anticipated to be significantly less than market rate for the property, resulting in a cost savings to the project. This ordinance would identify the property for a public purpose. Resolution 2608 will be presented to the Assembly at the April 23, 2012 meeting to authorize the manager to convey the property to the Juno Housing Trust at less than fair market value in support of the Juno Douglas High School Home Building Program. The Assembly Lands Committee at its February 27, 2012 meeting recommended that the Assembly approve this ordinance. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the Assembly on this ordinance? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for Assembly action. Ms. Danner.
Thank you. I would move Ordinance 2012-15 for the purpose of discussion.
You have the floor.
Thank you. Again, I have a question for Ms. Marlowe, if she can join us. At the February 27th Lands Committee meeting, we discussed this particular issue and the question of the current ownership and if there were any heirs to the property. Has that status changed, or is there still no one?
There is still no one. The owner of the property when the taxes were assessed is deceased, and we have contacted known heirs with certified letters. We did this through the foreclosure process as well. We're doing it as part of the public notice process now, and we have not received any responses from the four members of the family that we have contacted.
Ms. Danner.
And can you remind us what will happen if, in fact, the I'm sorry, I've lost my question. My question has to do with why we are acquiring this property for less than its fair market value. And it seems to me there was something important about that and about what happens to the property if there are no heirs to get any profits from the sale. Can you?
Yeah, so as part of the state statute, part of the foreclosure state statutes, once a municipality designates this for a public purpose, a member of the family cannot make a claim later on the property, nor can they come in and pay the delinquent property taxes and receive title to the property. So it extinguishes the heirs or the owner from coming back and receiving the property from the city after payment has been made.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Mr. Mayor, if I might, in response to Ms. Danner's issue, there was discussion at the Lands Committee about disposing of the property for less than its fair market value, and the issue there, I believe, was that any additional money that might come in from disposing of it at fair market value, if it's not designated for public purpose, belongs to the heirs, and if they don't come forward, and I don't remember the amount of time, it would, there's a legal term here, but it would go to the state.
Escheats.
That one. and therefore, the Treasury, in essence, is not losing anything. The taxpayers of Juneau aren't losing anything by disposing of this property in this way. Is that what you're recalling?
That is it. Thank you.
Further discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, an ordinance 2012-15 is adopted. We move next to ordinance 2012-16. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance authorizing the disposal of gravel from municipal property to CECON through a negotiated sale.
Madam Manager.
The CBJ has gravel resources in Hidden Valley that have been permitted for extraction but have yet to be mined. CECON has a gravel extraction operation in Hidden Valley that adjoins the CBJ extraction area. CECON proposes to amend its gravel extraction plan to include a portion of municipal property so that the toe of the final mining slope is at the common property line. This will allow CECON to maximize the use of its property and gravel resources, an accomplishment an improvement to the CBJ property in preparation for the full utilization of municipal gravel resources at a later date. CECON will incur the cost of developing the area, including clearing, mining, drainage, and final contouring. Due to the configuration of the land ownership and access, CECON holds the only legal access to the mining face. Therefore, the sale of the material will be a negotiated sale with CECON. The Assembly Lands Committee at its February 27, 2012 meeting recommended this action. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Mr. James Sidney.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. I'm James Sidney, 10400 Glacier Highway. I object to this ordinance of the city taking land that we have selected from the state and turning it over to private use as a of our resources. The legal access is that we put in a $600,000+ bridge across Lemon Creek just north of the corrections facility that the city and borough people paid for on the guise of putting in a parking lot and also accessing the North Lemon Creek property, which was the 780 acres that they got from the state for, they claimed it and they used it part of the San Kikahini school system. It was part of that same piece of property. The city has taken a lot of land and used it for their gravel extraction, and the idea was to have gravel for their projects. And if we go ahead and give away our resources, which you've done at Stabler Point. Now they're doing it at Fish Creek through private sales, and they have pending private sales for the Lemon Creek gravel. I do not know where this background has come in, that the city has gotten into the gravel sales, but they are sneaking into it the back door, and I object because of my ownership of a gravel pit out at Montana Creek. I own a third of it. I think my investment in the gravel pit is slowly getting eroded by the city going into competition against me. And the city has legal access to this gravel through the North Lemon Creek Access Bridge that was put in here 3-4 years ago for the airport parking impound yard. and they do have access to it, but there is no mining face that the city has. That's a mining face that CECON has, that they bought this gravel pit from the Tlingit Haida years ago. And I find it pretty hard to believe that the city would give away our resources so they can mine every ounce of gravel on their property, plus another 200,000 yards of of gravel or 200,000 yards is what it says, but that's about 300,000 tons or so. But there's no mechanism to where we can get this gravel for private use. This is just a line Secon's use of whatever they want to use it for. In the paperwork, it puts in there 95% city and state projects. But it seems kind of hard for me to believe that they're only going to use 5% of it for private use. And I think that the city doesn't, at our best interest, or any of the other forums that I've gone to in the past 30 years, that they want to get into the sale of gravel to private enterprises. That's not why we selected these lands.
Thank you, Mr. Sidney. Are there questions? Ms. Danner.
Thank you. Mr. Sidney, have you looked at this closely enough to find out what the city is charging for the gravel that it's giving, and is that the same sort of price that you would have to pay for it if you were getting the same kind of deal?
I have no access to gravel from the city, period. There is no place that I can get access to this gravel. And if it was possible that we could, I would more than happy to go mining gravel off the city property, because there's a lot of different areas in the city, the repertoire of all their properties they own, that we should be able to open up. But that's not the case.
A follow-up, if I may. The question I'm really trying to get to is, Do you think that Secon is going to have some sort of a market advantage in terms of being able to undercut the price or make more profit on this gravel because of this deal?
That's what I see, yeah. I don't see where they'll give the private contractors access to this gravel. They will use it for their own use.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Sidney. Is there any other member of the public who wishes to testify on Ordinance 2012-16? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for assembly action. Ms. Danner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move Ordinance 2012-16 for the purpose of discussion.
You have the floor.
And I have another question for Ms. Marlowe. It's not my fault. All these issues are very questionable. It's lots of questions. So Ms. Marlowe, we talked about this at Lands Committee as well, and you told us that this was a matter of benefit for the city in terms of can you just review that issue again with us?
Yes. I would point to the map if you don't have that open up. It's a good reference tool. But basically the way that this went is that Secon approached us and asked for permission to push the mining face back onto city property for two purposes. It allows them to continue with their gravel mining that they're doing on their property, and it allows them to have a large clear area on their side of the property line then that they can work and use for future purposes. What it also does for the city is it's a source of revenue to us. I anticipate on average that we'll get about $20,000 or $25,000 a year for a period of 10 years as revenues. And what it does for us is it avoids the future situation where we would mine gravel from our side of the property line and where we would end up then needing to contour from our side of the property line so that we didn't push over onto their side. You end up in that situation with something of a pyramid or a teepee of material. You have a 2-to-1 slope on their side of the property line, and you have a 2-to-1 slope on our side of the property line, and no one can use the material that sits across that common property line. So it sets us up for the future where we would not have to maintain that 2-to-1 slope on our side of the property line if they move the mining face back onto our property. So from our perspective, we have a revenue stream, and we have the highest use of the resource in the future.
And have we considered the economic impact on the rest of the construction community? Have we disproportionately benefited one player over the others?
To a certain extent, yes. To a certain extent. And, you know, as I say, we responded to CECON's request for the purposes of it benefits their property and it makes the best utilization of the resource for both landowners, essentially. It was not a deliberate attempt to get CECON an advantage in the market or to disadvantage anybody else, but that is somewhat of an outcome.
And one more, if I may, the 10 years of this particular agreement, do we intend to develop our property within that 10 years, start extraction on our own at any time in the future?
No.
Do we have any kind of a horizon at all for that property?
We do not. We do not. The 10 years is really just to keep CECON extracting and moving forward in the property so that this doesn't stretch out and become some 20-year project or some project with no unknown ending point. The 10-year term is just to kind of move things along.
Mr. Keaton.
Ms. Marlowe, I notice in the manager's report she says that the current configuration of the property is such that CECON is the only legal access to the mining face. At the conclusion of this contract, will that still be the case, or will there be an accessible mining face on CBJ's property that other developers or other gravel miners could access?
At the end of CECON's operations, all that will happen is the mining face will be moved back onto our property. And no, there will not be a mining face opened up to the public as a result of their extractions. What we would have to do is we would have to come in at the top of the hill here and move into the material this way. From a south to the north direction, we would have to move into the material in order to get gravel extraction. And that's not what CECON's proposing to do. So we could mine all of this gravel in the future, but it would take us a while to get anywhere back near the CECON property line. We'd have to start at a different property line and work towards that.
Further discussion? Ms. Danner.
Thank you. And so it seems like that would be a perfectly legitimate thing for us to ask for in exchange for this resource, in addition to sort of as a refinement to this request, is to have an easement over that property after it's been cleared to get to our own face.
We could ask for that as part of the contract. I'm not sure what CECON would say about that. We could ask for an easement to get access to our side. We have a mining plan where we can move back to that common property line, so we have an alternate mechanism to get to that resource. Quite honestly, the new gravel pit that we've just permitted behind the Lemon Creek Correctional Center that we've just spent the $600,000 for the bridge on, that's going to be about a 25 to 35-year gravel supply. So the thought that we need to go further up into the valley and open up yet another mining face is way far out on our resource horizon, and that's something that we're just not seeing the need for at this time.
Mr. Dibble?
No, nothing. Come here.
Any other discussion? Mr. Keel.
Ms. Marlowe, as part of the discussion at the Lands Committee, we discussed briefly, and I wonder if you could run us back over the numbers that the ordinance or the supporting materials here talk about $2.41 per ton, and the delta between that and market rate today was roughly what you thought the cost of clearing the land and contouring the slope. Could you run us back over those?
Sure.
Please?
So market rate right now is about $6. And what we've done, $6 per ton is roughly market rate. And what we've done is we've worked with CECON. Our engineering department has worked with CECON to come up with the costs of what it takes to get that gravel basically to market. You have to clear the land. You have to deal with drainage issues. You have to deal with permitting issues. You have operations and maintenance, and then you have to contour the slope when you're complete with it. And the estimates that we agreed to, engineering department and CECON, was that it was going to cost about $3.60 per ton to get the gravel to market or to have it be marketable. So we reduced that $6 market value by 360, the cost of bringing the material online, and we've come up with $2.41 that we would receive from CECON as revenue.
Further discussion? If not, is there objection? If not, ordinance 2012-16 is adopted. We'll take a 10-minute recess, reconvening at 8:20. We have before us next ordinance 2012-17. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the building code relating to application for a permit.
Madam Manager.
This amendment would allow the building division to protect landowners' properties from development without their consent. CBJ has had several complaints from property owners concerning permit applications not obtaining the landowner's permission to set up vending structures and various improvements on their property. It is ultimately the landowner's responsibility to maintain and limit the use of the properties as required by city ordinance. Example of this is the corner of the old police station. And if you think back into the summer when there's a popcorn vendor, there's a luau vendor and food vendors, those all were in place without the landowner's authorization. The Public Works and Facilities Committee recommended this action at March 12, 2012 meeting. I recommend this the ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the Assembly on Ordinance 2012-17? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for Assembly action. Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Assembly approval of Ordinance 2012-17 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to Ordinance 2011-11AE. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $4,610 as funding to the Juneau Police Department for officer training on 3D crash reconstruction software, grant funding provided by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
Madam Manager.
CBJ will provide in-kind matching funds in the form of police officer salaries while they attend this training. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the Assembly on Ordinance 2011-11AE? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for Assembly action. Ms. Crane.
I move adoption of Ordinance 2011-11AE and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next to Ordinance 2011-11AF. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $136,870.47 as funding to Capital Transit for Mobility Management grant funding provided by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Madam Manager.
This grant funding would be able to be used to replace a portion of the $10,000 CBJ match required for the Mobility Manager Grant 2011-11M adopted in September 19, 2011, and $135,089.94 of the grant would be used to replace a portion of the CBJ match requirement for $1 million Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Safety Federal Transit Administration pass-through grant. CBJ will provide the remaining match funds in the form of Capital Transit staff salaries and benefits. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to address the Assembly on Ordinance 2011-11AF? Seeing none, public participation is closed. We're ready for Assembly action. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of serial number 2011-11AF and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next on our agenda to new business. We have before us the Marie Drake School Renovation Bid Award. Madam Manager.
Yes, the work for this project includes renovation of a portion of the existing Marie Drake School, construction to include elevator replacement, extensive renovation of 4 classrooms, 4 restrooms, the nursing suite, 1 janitor's closet, and miscellaneous related work. I recommend if no protest is received during the 10-day protest period, award of this project Dawson Construction for the base bid and additive alternates 1, 2, and 3 for a total of $1,116,500.
Is there any member of the public who wishes to comment on the manager's recommendation? Hearing none, pleasure of the assembly. Is there objection to the manager's recommendation? Hearing none, so ordered. That brings us next on our agenda to staff reports. Madam Manager?
Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Mr. Attorney?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And we turn then to Assembly reports, begin with committee reports and the Committee of the Whole.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Committee of the Whole will be meeting on Monday. And the topic will be an update on the AJ mine, and the focus will be on the water study.
Thank you. That brings us next to Human Resources Committee.
Thank you, Mr.
Banner.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This evening's Human Resources Committee meeting, immediately prior to the Assembly meeting, we considered appointments to boards and commissions, and the following recommendations I bring to you for your consideration now. For the Board of Equalization, Human Resources Committee recommends David Epstein for a term expiring December 31, 2014, and Zachary Mark Worrell for a term expiring 12/31/2013.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. We also recommend forward the name of Duff Mitchell for a seat on the Juneau Commission on Sustainability expiring June 30, 2013.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. And finally, the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee has three open seats. We forward the names of Jeff Wilson for reappointment, Eric Morrison, and Tom Ritecki for terms expiring February 28, 2014.
You've heard the recommendation of the committee. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Also, in our discussion at the Human Resources Committee, we considered our start time, which has fluctuated back and forth between 6 p.m. and 5:15 routinely due to our increased workload, especially in consideration of the homeless issue. We have agreed as a committee to begin meeting routinely at 5:30. And that's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. That brings us next to Lands and Resources. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In our efficient way, in the simplest efficient way, we have discussed both of the issues that we had before Lands and passed 2012-11 and 2012-14.
That brings us next to Finance Committee. Ms. Crane.
A reminder that we have weekly Finance Committee meetings starting this Wednesday at 5:30, and this Wednesday we will have a distribution of the operating budget, the capital budget, and the CIP six-year plan. There will be an FY13 budget overview by the manager and an expenditures and revenues report by the finance director.
Thank you. And finally, a report from our Public Works and Facilities Committee, Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had to travel out of state participate by teleconference, so Ms. Becker will be able to give the report for us as she chaired the meeting.
Ms. Becker?
My goodness, I didn't know I was going to do that, so I haven't thought about it. Mr. Wanamaker. Okay, why don't we do this together? What did we do at that meeting, Mr. Wanamaker?
We took care of it tonight. The next meeting is April 9th. At noon. Thank you.
We did do everything tonight. Yep.
With that, we'll go to Assembly liaison reports. Mr. Wanamaker.
No report tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Smith.
No report.
Mr. Keough.
No report tonight. The PRAC and the Affordable Housing Commission have meetings upcoming before our next meeting.
Mr. Dibdahl.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Ms. Crane.
Eagle Crest Board held a public meeting on March the 28th here in the Assembly Chambers on the master plan and received a number of good public comments on the plan, which is now going back to the board, and we hope to have back to the Assembly for adoption probably sometime early summer.
Thank you. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do have a report for this one, Docks and Harbor. And the first one is a motion of support to the Assembly. Docks and Harbor passed a motion of support to forward the name of Mike Pusich Douglas Harbor to the Assembly, and I so move.
Just as a question of procedure, would this normally be done in the form of a resolution so that public testimony may be taken on the matter?
It would be, and we could have a resolution prepared for the next meeting easily.
Let me ask whether there's objection to the preparation of such a resolution. Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you. The issue about the boats going in and out to Tahoe Smokeries is still under investigation, and Dockson Harbor is going to continue conducting those simulations. The Douglas Harbor, April 23rd, 24th, and 25th, will be discussed with the Juneau Regulatory Field Office for this dredging project. It has been going on for quite a while for Army Corps of Engineers. Stater Harbor, the bids for Phase 1 will be opened on April 10th. Aurora Harbor, the design services for Aurora Harbor is being prepared, and this RFP should be advertised April 8th with the proposals due back to Dockson Harbor May 8th. The Maritime Festival is scheduled for May 12th. The board approved summer moorage discounts for Harris, Aurora, and Douglas Harbors. It's buy one, get one free type of thing. I think it's buy two, get one free. The Assembly Harbor Board meeting will be scheduled in November of 2012 when we have a joint meeting. Even though that's a long ways away, you could put it on your calendar, November 2012. Dockson Harbor will present its budget to the Finance Committee on May 9th. Our port director will speak at the chamber luncheon on May 10th. The port director is looking into the issue of safety with the lightering operations. There was action taken or approved to terminate and evict a title and lease of a person because that person had not kept up their lease rent. Juneau Marine Services has been hired to repair the Ock Bay Boatyard haul-out facility, and it's going to be a back rent consideration for up to $40,000 for that. They restaffed a full-time employee to work in the summer at the Aurora Harbor office. They approved the terminal staging area parking lot plan, and they approved a parking lot fee of $2 per hour in that area. I put at your desk this roundabout, out there by DeHart's. The Department of Transportation spoke to Dockson Harbor and gave us these, and I thought you might be interested in seeing them. They have not really chosen which way they're going to go, if it's going to be a three-legged or a four-legged. It depends on whether or not they can buy DeHart's. It makes a difference. And then, if I have it, I hope I do, they approved a seal. Ta-da. I think it's quite pretty. And this is the Dockson Harbor seal.
It sounded like it.
That's what it did. I know. So I believe that's all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
With that, Ms. Danner.
Thank you. I have two liaison reports, one for the local emergency preparedness committee. There are still two seats open for hazardous materials seats. These are the targeted candidates for these seats. And by the way, I'm actually making these announcements with hopes that people on the radio or in the paper will hear about it. If you work in an industry or in an organization where hazardous materials are transported or handled in any way, this is an excellent opportunity to both serve the community by sharing your expertise and also be on the inside in terms of how to help in the case of any kind of emergency in our community. It's a great opportunity. I serve on this committee. It's very interesting work, and I highly recommend it. My liaison report from the airport. The airport continues to work on their lobby remodel, as you may have noticed, if you have the opportunity to pass through. They continue to keep coffee service open downstairs, and except for a brief interruption, the gift shop is open daily. You may have noticed some confusion, traffic confusion, up there in the passenger waiting area because of the way the seating is organized, and there just doesn't seem to be a real central place for people to stand en masse while they're waiting to get on the plane. That's actually by design. The carpet, if you'll notice, there are light strips of carpet. If you follow the light strips of carpet between the place where you enter onto the plane and where you exit the secured area, that's the traffic pattern. So now it's actually going to get a little bit more confusing before it gets better. New display cases are going to go in a way that will discourage the passengers who are currently congregating right in the middle of the seated area. So large groups of people are standing in the center of the couch area and confused about why it's so hard to get through there. It's going to get just a little bit harder to get through there because they don't want you to go through there. The point is to find a seat, get comfortable, and relax and wait until your row numbers are called. So please relax, enjoy your book, and enjoy the new display cases because they're going to be filled with local art plus local merchants' work. It'll be a great opportunity to improve our space there. Also, coming soon to an airport departure lounge behind security near you, there will be coffee service real soon. We're going to have a coffee cart. So that's it.
Mr. Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Bartlett Hospital Board met on last Tuesday. I was unable to make it, but I know they're working on finances. Also, they've got a search committee for the CEO, and they've hired a firm to help them with that search.
With that, we turn to Assembly comments and questions. Mr. Wanamaker.
No comments tonight. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Smith.
I just want to welcome again our deputy manager, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Keel.
In addition to echoing Mr. Smith's welcome, just two comments, Mr. Mayor, tonight. I attended the Choose Respect rally that happened first on the Capitol steps and then down to Marine Park this week. It was an excellent event. It was inspiring. The Lieutenant Governor hosted the Juno event and did an excellent job. Juno's Choose Respect march and rally were marked a real highlight for me by one of our basketball coaches from Thunder Mountain High School talking about the Coaching Boys Into Men curriculum that they are using. They are working in coordination with AWARE, and it's part of the overall mission of teaching character and changing the way we work with each other. And it's not just the Thunder Mountain basketball team. It's spreading to other sports teams throughout the city and borough of Juneau. It's a great step to see that our coaches are doing more than just coaching winning teams, which we hope they continue to do. They are also really working hard on coaching our young people into adults and good adults in our community. The second item I have is that along with Ms. Danner and a couple of other dignitaries, including the whole Juneau legislative delegation, we got to turn on the second HAWQ, high-intensity pedestrian-activated crosswalk, which has to be the most tortured acronym to get to HAWQ I've ever heard. But it's a push-button crosswalk. It stops traffic on Glacier Highway right there at the Schweitzer Creek development and the Walmart across the street. There have been a lot of accidents there. It was a long time in coming, and I have to applaud when the decision got made to make that improvement. I have to applaud the Department of Transportation for moving quickly to install that and get it up and running. I really believe it's going to make that area safer for our pedestrians, which means safer for our drivers and for the kids at the middle school there, too. So that's a great improvement in that area. That's all I have tonight, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dibdahl.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Ms. Craig.
Nothing. Thank you.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think the welcome is basically for both of our city manager and our deputy city manager. So nice to see you in the seat and nice to have a deputy manager, too. So thank you.
Ms. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I actually have four things. This was such a meaty meeting. I can't let it end without asking this body's consideration of Mr. Walsh's request. It seems to me that while I'm not at all prepared or well informed about this particular property and its zoning, it seems to me that it is not a bad idea, if the circumstances have changed around Hunsaker's Pond, for us to look again at whether or not it is properly zoned in the comprehensive plan. And so I would like to recommend that this be moved to the Community Development Department and the Planning Commission for consideration.
Discussion. Objection. Hearing none.
Great, thanks. And since I'm on a roll, I'll also mention Carla Hartz and Julie Coghills. And there was also Gwen Bayless, who all spoke about dog waste and responsible dog ownership. And at the risk of offending any dog owner, let me say that I think responsible dog owners have nothing to fear from what I'm about to say. I am in favor of us doing whatever we can to encourage more responsible dog ownership. If there was an 8-year attempt at voluntary compliance with dog licensure and waste pickup, then it hasn't worked because my family uses the EVAR, the dike trail around the airport for recreation, and it is abysmal. I do not know where we can refer that in terms of looking for solutions. And so I'm asking if this body can think of what we should do next in order to address this problem.
Ms. Danner, I know that the city manager has, I hate to put it this way, a lot of experience with the issue. But she does, and perhaps this is one, Madam Manager, that you could examine in light of the testimony tonight and your prior work in dealing with canine relations.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I will follow up on that.
Thank you very much. All right, my third matter. In our mail that came to us in the last week, I don't know if you've all noticed, we received the state assessor's report regarding the audit that was performed on our own assessor's office. There are no less than a dozen recommendations, some of which I think are administrative and, in fact, have probably already been addressed, and some which I think are policy-related. And I think that that's also a matter that we probably need to have before us in some venue.
Let me refer that to the Finance Committee.
That sounds fine. However, it will be after budget discussions.
You're responsible for the schedule.
Thank you.
Ms. Craig.
And then my fourth and final issue is not a small one. As you know, the Human Resources Committee has been working quite diligently with the rest of the community on the issue of homelessness, and particularly the problem that we see downtown. I'm amazed and inspired by the work of all the dedicated individuals in our community. This last week, the vulnerability survey was conducted, and Kyle Rennick came before us at the Human Resources Committee meeting this evening to talk about those results, and I'm hoping that that will be well publicized in the media. I think we're making good progress at understanding the nature of the problem. I feel like we are a very long way from a solution. I'm concerned that we don't even know what the solution looks like yet. And so we may be optimistically 3 to 5 years out from a solution, a long-term solution. And therefore, if we don't want to have a conflict between our Downtown Business Association and our cruise ship industry in the summer times, I just feel like you can't keep telling these people you can't be here without telling them where they can be. To this end, I have a motion to propose. The motion is that we delay the demolition of the city shop under the bridge temporarily so that we can consider whether or not that is an adequate temporary facility for a temporary solution for our homeless situation. There's a lot of work to do. Oh, sorry, that's my motion. Now I'll speak to it, if I may.
You have the floor.
Thank you. There is a lot of work to be done. First, to find out whether or not the shop, in fact, could be used in any way at all, for any temporary period at all. I note that Mr. Watt and Mr. Pernula are here, and they could comment about this if people are interested. But I think what I'm asking for is time to consider whether that facility can be of use for us before we make that ultimate decision to tear it down.
Ms. Crane.
I had this discussion with the city manager some months ago and asked if we could use that facility. And part of the difficulty is that the city is still storing equipment in that facility. And so there are liability issues associated with that. And then the other problem over the winter has been that we do push snow back there. And so there is a great potential for a problem there. So Mr. Swope did look at the issue and thought at this time it would be problematic to be using that facility. So I don't know if things have changed, but that was the response I had when I asked the same question some months ago.
Ms. Keeper, would you object to asking Mr. Watt to come forward with any observations you have to make?
Nope.
Mr. Watt, you've heard the motion. Could you comment?
Friday, we actually opened bids for the demolition of the building, and so if we're not going to do that, we need to know very soon. So it was a $115,000 bid, and that would not come back to the assembly for approval. And I think we posted and gave contractors notice of that posting. So pending completion of the posting period and protest period, we would move in that direction. The current use of the site is anticipated to continue to be used for snow at least through next winter. And that hinges on our development of a new snow storage site at the rock dump. Mr. Pernula and Mr. Ford and I bantered a little bit at the break at Ms. Danner's suggestion about the various building code and use issues that would exist. And I would imagine a conditional use process, and I would imagine there would be some building code type requirements, although Mr. Ford really didn't have time to get into that. I would also imagine there would be a variety of management issues about what the facility would be and who would manage it and how that would be funded. Broadly, the building is a heavy equipment shop, that was used for maintenance of vehicles, and then there's a corner of it that was offices. So in its current configuration, it's not set up for shelter operation. So at a minimum, it would require some renovations. How much, I guess, would depend on what proposal would be considered. Our last direction from the Assembly would have been last year when the Assembly appropriated monies for the demolition of the shop through the capital improvement program. At that time, we had a master planning exercise considering park improvements in the area, the possible construction of a new facility that might house maritime services and port operations, as well as extension of Seawalk to the area. So this would be a departure from all of that effort.
Ms. Dana.
Yes, Mr. Watt, what do you think the impact of a delay in the demolition would be for somewhere between 30 and 90 days? I'm just guessing.
I guess our bids are structured in a way that our contractors are required to hold their prices for a number of days. So I don't know that there would be an impact if we delayed for a month or so. Beyond a month, we might see different pricing on the demolition.
Mr. Wanamaker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. After hearing the information from our city staff about the proposed use and the existing uses and needs that we have, I would appreciate it if Ms. Danner would withdraw her motion and instead ask the city manager to prepare a recommendation, look into this and prepare a recommendation for the Human Resource Committee that might be doable alternatives. It seems like we're on a good track with engineering in that facility, and we need to stay the course, and I would not want to vote against trying to do something for homeless people, but we need something that doesn't sound like this is the solution to me, so I would not be able to support it. Thank you.
Ms. Danner, followed by Mr. Dipto.
And just to be clear, while Mr. Watt talked about modifications to the structure or renovations, that sort of thing, I am really talking about, I want to know what is the least we can do to this building in order to allow for shelter of our homeless and vulnerable citizens. It would also require, and so that's why there are several hoops to jump through here, it would also require that we find an agency who is willing to adopt and fund the manpower necessary to make it a supervised facility. So there are a number of things that would be required, and I think our community would be pleased to see us make temporary concessions and then move forward with the public works plan after that.
Mr. Dipto.
Yeah, I couldn't support the motion either. I think we're a long ways from coming up with solutions and a maintenance building becoming suddenly a shelter. I think we're going down the wrong road.
Mr. Stone?
I just want to say, considering what the building has been used for, I would be concerned that there might be remediation. This could be a real, in my opinion, a real problem, using that facility for homeless. So I don't think I could support it.
Further discussion, Mr. Keel, followed by Ms. Crane.
Just to that particular point, are we aware of hazardous materials or remediation needs or other issues with that structure? I mean, if we're to the point of contracting for its removal, what do we know?
I don't have all the details with me, but I know that we do have underground fuel tanks, which is normal for lots of facilities. I'm sure the slab in the equipment maintenance area is stained with diesel and oil and probably has lots of odor issues. I wouldn't be surprised if there were small amounts of asbestos in the building. That's all I can tell you right now.
Ms. Crane.
But I don't think it's a hugely impacted site.
Ms. Crane.
I agree with Ms. Danner in that I don't think we're going to get any relief from this issue until we find a place for the people who are causing the majority of the problems downtown for them to go. The problems are caused because there is housing for the homeless, but there's not housing for people who have been drinking or currently have drug problems. And so these are some of the people that are bringing up issues with the merchants and people downtown. And we need a place for them to safely go and be housed. But I also think that this proposal needs a little more work before we pass a resolution. We need more information. We need, I think, some input from the city manager on what maybe some other options may be before we just pass the resolution.
Further discussion? Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
No.
Mr. Wanamaker?
No.
Mr. Stone?
No.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
No.
Ms. Danner?
Yes.
Mayor Botello?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, no. Mr. Ditto?
No.
Mayor Botello?
No. Motion Mr. fails. Dittell. I have a sense of the body, however, that there is a request to the manager to explore any options that come to mind with staff and to make those available first to the Human Resources Committee and then to the Assembly as a whole. Mr. Smith? Ms. Danner, anything further?
That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Mr. Stone?
I have no comments other than I want to echo the welcoming of the Deputy City Manager and, of course, our manager.
And again, I join all other members in our welcome. Also, had the pleasure today of attending the retirement ceremony for Captain Buddy Custard. I think as a measure of the high esteem that he was held, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, Admiral Robert Papp, was here in town to lead the ceremony, which was hosted by Admiral Ostebo. It was a very moving event, and of course we wish Buddy and his wife, Tricia, well. They are making Juneau home. They're proud to call themselves Alaskans, and we wish them well. Madam Manager, anything further?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Attorney?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Assembly members? Seeing none, we are adjourned.